Hello out there in podcast land. We are back finally again for another episode of Kennel Confidential Podcast. This is going to be another episode where you get just me and Chad, no guests this time. And we're going to spend a little time talking about what to expect when expecting. You know, Chad and I will never claim to be experts or play one on TV. Everybody's opinions and desires, I guess, in a pup are going to be different. So this is just going to be coming from a couple of feist dog hunters, and we'll give you our best opinion, advice, tips, tricks, secrets, if we got any. I don't have any. Anywho, Chad, it's been a while, it feels like.
Yeah, I thought we'd done quit or something.
J-O-B.
What's that?
The J-O-B is getting in the way.
Yeah, you've had a little bit going on this past few weeks.
Yep, chasing my tail, but I don't ever complain about being employed. I just sometimes complain that I don't get to squirrel hunt and do the things I want to do because I'm employed. But I'm always happy to have a job. Puppy pains episode. I guess this, we've had our thumbtack stuck in this idea for probably a few months now. And we're kind of holding it for this time of year for, you know, the leaves come on, spring puppy litter start hitting the ground and getting ready to go home, and a bunch of new pups ready to get started, and a lot of pups land in the hands of very capable people, but some people may just be getting into it for the first time. So I guess we do our best to give them a little tips and tricks.
Yeah, and I think that most of the time, people that are very new to it, never done it before, I think they're apprehensive, they're cautious, they're worried, but a lot of times they do a better job than what somebody that's had them before, and kind of their expectations are higher, where a new person, you know, they don't know what to expect really. So I think they may tend to do a little bit better of a job.
Well, I've only had two, so I consider myself a newbie. You've had plenty more than two, so we'll have very different perspectives. You'll get a 20 like plus year perspective and a 4 plus year perspective.
Well, just like you know, you started out with smoke. Didn't know anything about, you know, not much. You didn't know anything about training, I guess. Got him going, and unfortunately got run over, and you started all over with a new pup. You know, a lot of times I talk to you, and I'm like, be patient, be patient, be patient. Well, I know what I want. She just needs to get there. Well, she will, but she's not going to do it overnight. So I think that expectation you had of, well, this is what I had, this is what I want again, and you had forgotten how much time it really took to get there.
That is true. And that was one thing you told me, actually, the night that we were talking after Smoke got run over. You had told me that when I get my next one, the most important thing is to not expect the next one to pick up where the last one left off. And I had to catch myself quite a few times on that because I felt like I'd already trained this puppy. And I'm starting again. So, yeah, it was rough on my patience, that's for sure. Patience that I thought I had, and one thing these squirrel dogs have taught me is I don't have near as much patience as I thought I did. But maybe it's the gray hair creeping in, too.
Yeah, and you know, kindly, what you touched on, and I'd like to say it again, that, you know, we're not experts. You know, everybody's got different opinions, different styles, different techniques. Really, I don't think any of them's wrong. They're just all different. As long as at the end of the day you end up with a squirrel dog, nothing you did was wrong.
I agree completely.
It just might be a little different than what I would have done.
Yeah, and what suits me may not suit you. What suits you may not suit the other guy. So, yeah, there's all kinds of approaches and tips and tricks and old school and new school. So, well, let's just start with selecting a pup. So I know when I was getting into it, and of course we got Facebook now, there's all kinds of pages, and Google's right at our fingertips, although Google, I learned, is not very handy at all when it comes to trying to learn anything about squirrel hunting with dogs. Just not a lot of information, not a lot of content out there that's searchable, in my opinion. Good content. So that being said, I'd lay in the bed, and I knew there was feist, and I knew there was curs, and that's about all I knew. So I'd sit there and surf pages and read this person's post and that person's post and find something on YouTube. And I still think I there's things about all the breeds that I could like. All I've had is Feist, and I don't have a reason to quit them now. But that being said, what do you think the most important parts of selecting a puppy? I mean, from breed to breeder, what would your best advice be to a new, somebody never had a squirrel dog?
Research. Research, research, research.
More than the internet. You're talking about even go to clubs and talk to people. Get out and watch them.
Yeah, go to clubs. Go out on Cast. You know, I've got a big love-hate relationship with Facebook. More hate than love. But, you know, I guess now, the day we've got now, it's a good place to start. The best thing to do is pick up the phone and call people. I don't know anybody that wouldn't just talk to you. And whether you're talking to me or talking to whoever, we're going to be a little biased towards our dogs. Anybody is.
If you didn't like it, it wouldn't be yours.
What's that?
I said, of course you're going to be biased towards yours, because if you didn't like it, you wouldn't feed it.
Right. But talk to several different people and, you know, try to figure out in talking to them kind of what you want. Do you want a dog that uses more just eyes and ears? Do you want a dog with a little bit of nose? Do you? You know, what size do you want? What color do you want? You know, if you're a patient, you can pick out everything. But don't go on Facebook and, oh, man, this one's just burning it up, winning everything. He must be reproducing. Winning does not equal reproducing. And at the same time, reproducing does not equal winning. So, I mean, there's some misleading stuff. And I'm not saying that dogs that are winning won't reproduce. All I'm saying is just research.
I think that's good advice, and there is a lot of that. And I think Facebook obviously plays a huge part in that. You know, everybody's got a platform, and everybody can put their dog out there and, you know, show it off, good, bad, or otherwise. You know, like we said earlier, everybody's proud of their dog or biased towards their dog. So my dog may accomplish something that somebody else is looking at it and thinking, well, big deal, you know. But as long as I'm happy, I'm happy. But that being said, just because I'm happy and I win this hunt or that hunt or this show or whatever, that doesn't mean that dog will put it back in there. I totally agree with that.
Well, I'll use Bo for an example. I mean, he's done a lot. He's won a lot. And if he produced 100 puppies and only 10 puppies made squirrel dogs, he's only 10%. So if you were coming to me to buy a puppy knowing that Bo's only throwing 10%, well, how big of a gamble do you want to take? You're going to be 1 out of 10 puppies is going to make it, and you want to buy one from me. That's probably not a good way to spend your money. Now, if he had 100 puppies on the ground and 80 of them made it, 80%, that might be a pretty good gamble. I mean, that's what I mean by not every dog is going to make it, whether they go to a home that decide not to hunt or, you know, whatever the case may be. Not every dog's going to make it. You just want to play the odds, play the percentages, and try to get, you know, the best you can get. I don't believe in a proven cross whatsoever. So
yeah, expand on that a little bit, because I mean, that's what you see a lot of, is, you know, this is a proven cross. And I think we all know what they mean when anybody says that, is just that the cross has been made before between the same male and female, and the litter all turned out to be squirrel dogs. But expand a little bit on why you don't like the term proven cross.
Well, if you take two dogs and breed those two together 10 times, and she had 10 pups each litter, that's 100 puppies. Those genes are not going to line up the same way all 100 times. Every puppy is going to be genetically different in some ways. You know, if you've got a sister and she's got blue eyes and your eyes are brown, you know, she's got blonde hair and you've got, you know, brown hair, those genetics didn't line up the same way. If so, you all would look alike, talk alike, act alike, you know, identical twins, basically. But if you look at a litter of puppies, a lot of times you'll have all the colors will be the same. When they get full grown, they'll be 2 inches, 3 inches difference. You know, they'll tree a little bit different, hunt a little bit different. So all those differences, that means that those genetics did not line up the exact same way in both dogs. So I don't believe you can have a proven cross when you do that.
That makes sense. I can get my head around that, understand that. Once the research is over, the pup's got to come home, which is usually around the six-week mark, I believe, right? 6-8 weeks, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So the part that drives us all crazy, is, and you and I are a little different on this, but that comes down to me being a one-dog guy and you having several dogs. But when does the training begin with you? What age do you think a dog should be, you should start fooling with it?
Well, can we back up just a little bit? We went from breeding to training. How about let's pick a pup first?
Okay. Picking a puppy. How do we do that?
Close your eyes, reach in and grab one. It all depends. Everybody has a little bit different. I suggest you pick a puppy like you picked your girlfriend or your wife or your boyfriend or your husband. You know, looks comes first. If you didn't like the way your other half looked, you probably wouldn't have approached them. So you got to have a good looking puppy. Next, they've got to have a good attitude. You know, personality's got to be there. If you don't like their personality, you're probably not going to keep them long. So if they've got the looks and the personality, now you're more likely to hunt the pup. That's what I normally go with. Because at 6 weeks old, you don't know what that pup's going to act like or be like, you know, at 8 months old. Mostly, you know, I go by looks. And if I've got time and I can, and I normally don't, I usually take whatever's left over. But if I have time and I'm actually picking a pup and can, I'll go sit down and see which pup comes to me. Or most of the time, I pick the puppy that stands back away from everybody else and just kindly watches me. If there's six pups and five of them are playing and roughhousing and one's looking at me and sitting down and paying attention to me, I think that they're already trying to figure out what I'm wanting them to do. So that's usually the one that I pick.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. But paying attention to temperament in the kennel with the litter, I think that's good advice too. You know, we talked to Canine Power, and he had mentioned, I don't remember if he told us on the podcast or if we were recording or not. I mean, but anyway, he had mentioned that with his Jag Terriers that he would kind of smack the cage and try to catch them off guard and watch the reaction. You know, to me, that's good advice. If you know how the dog reacts to being startled, is it gun shy? Whatever you're looking for by smacking that cage, and it may not be important to me, but it is to you. But you know, I think that'd be a good tip or trick too, just to pay attention to temperament in the kennel to know, I guess, somewhat to expect as the dog gets older and reacts to different training and getting its butt whipped and yelled at and that sort of thing. It could show intelligence too, I guess. It doesn't take a real smart dog to jump at the door, but a dog sitting back watching might be a little more intelligent if he's taking or she's taking the time to figure out what's going on when the other ones are just jumping up trying to fall out of the door.
Yeah, and some people like a more bold pup. They want one that's attacking their hand and jumping all over them. And if that's what they like, hey, if that's the personality they like, I like it for them. I said, I guess this show's going to be a whole lot of opinion and, you know, kind of take it or leave it, just kindly what we do, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to talk to everybody about the topic because everybody's desires and requirements are different. But I remember we were at the pound picking up my house dog. She was, I had three or four litter mates there with her, all 8-12 weeks old. That is one thing I paid attention to. A couple of the pups were, you know, just coming up, getting all over my hand and real excitable. And then there was, you know, probably one hanging back in the back of the kennel that didn't want to come to me at all, which I don't like. And the one I chose, I knew I wanted a brindle female, so I kind of narrowed that down too. But the one I chose was just kind of middle of the road. You know, she wasn't hiding in the back away from us, but she wasn't trying to chew my fingernails off. She was just kind of that middle of the road temperament, which for a house dog is kind of what I wanted. I didn't want a lazy couch potato. I want her to have some kind of energy to play. But that's good advice, to pay attention to the temperament in the kennel. So once you've reached in and grabbed your dog, now we're bringing it home. And when do you think training begins?
as soon as you bring it home.
Well, let me back up. I don't mean just all intelligence training. Yes, I think every dog gets some kind of training when you bring them home, whether it's don't do that or go outside or whatever. Squirrel training, when do you start scent training or how do you, when and how do you start? Let me ask it that way.
I guess it all depends. Littermate yours, Rascal, I brought him in the house at 6 weeks old, and we decided that he was going to be a house dog. So my wife got him a little stuffed animal squirrel just to play with and chew on. And he was up on the couch, and I was tapping it on the back of the couch, you know, up high. And he got to barking at it, and I'd give it to him. So actually, you know, at 6-7 weeks old, I was already really starting starting down the road of treeing, you know, with him. I think the earlier you can get them barking at something, and I don't care if it's a squirrel tail, a stuffed animal, bologna sandwich, if you can get them barking up, the earlier you can get them doing that, I think the farther it goes down later. And I'm getting bad about it. I'll have pups up there that, you know, I won't mess with them as much. And it seems like, you know, when they get 4 or 5 months old, it's a little harder to get them to bark than it was when they were 6 weeks old. So I think when I have time and I can, I think if you can get them barking up at anything at, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks old, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to say that. I know that you always, or I thought that you always, as far as your squirrel hunting training went, was later on in their life. 4, 5, 6 months old is where I thought. But that is true. Right. You know, you're still building, you're not necessarily training them to hunt a squirrel, but you're building the foundation for a desired behavior.
Right. And then, you know, as far as walking them in the woods and starting them on a tube or showing them a cage squirrel or something like that, I normally don't do any of that till they are, you know, 4 to 6 months old.
Those are all good things.
And that 4 to 6 months old also depends on what time of year it is. You know, really.
Yeah, those are all good tidbits.
What's that?
Those are all good tidbits. So you said a mouthful there. So you
said, you know, if I had a 6-month-old puppy right now, I probably ain't going to mess with it at all. Myself. Even if I got it barking at a tube, even if I got it barking at a cage squirrel, even if I got it doing all of this, you know, we're still 7 months away from it doing much in the wild. I kindly feel like I'm either wasting my time or going to create bad habits. But now, like I said, that's just me. You know, if I've got a 6-month-old puppy in November, you know, and I'm going to work with it a little bit, but I'm going to be walking it in the woods more. You know, that October leaves start falling off. It's not a great time to take a young dog to the woods because most of the time squirrels aren't on the ground then. You know, about the middle of November, 1st December, squirrels are really traveling on the ground. That's when those 6, 8-month-old puppies need to be walked in the woods pretty often.
Yeah, and that's November, December for us. You know, different parts of the country, I guess, could be affected.
Right.
You know, time of year could be different, but the time of the year that Chad's referring to is just the time late in the season when they're gorging themselves before they start denning up for hard, cold days.
Well, when the nuts are in the trees, they're in the trees. When the nuts are on the ground, they're on the ground. So I guess would be a better way to put it.
Right. Well, so you said a mouthful a minute ago. You said walking in the woods, starting on a tube, showing a cage squirrel. Let's talk about all those a little bit. So, to me, if I had to place those in order, I'd probably put tube and cage before walking in the woods. Which, again, I've only trained two, but I consider myself successful at training two squirrel dogs. I don't know that I'll ever win anything or you'll see me on TV with my dog, but I promise you, if we go to the woods, we're going to kill a squirrel. So I've 2 for 2 on squirrel dogs, I'll say. But so for me, I start messing with a tail is, I guess, my tool of choice. But both dogs, I've started just as soon as I could. You know, I didn't expect them to follow a scent and toenail a tree and bark up to it at 8 weeks old. But I had it tied to a string, and I was in the yard just playing with them, you know, letting them chase it. And then every now and then I'd let them catch it just to keep them interested. And when they caught it, I pet them up real good when they got the fur in their mouth. Again, just behaviors that I'm trying to build a foundation for desired behavior later on. But once they get up big enough, I kind of did two different things. So with Smoke, first dog, I did a lot of drags. And he did pretty good, but I was relating it, I guess, where the red fern grows. That's kind of where I was getting my training tactics was, you know, he runs around the house with that coon hide and pulls it up a tree and the dogs tree it. That's kind of what I was doing with Smoke. I'd pull it up short trees where he could see it a little bit, and I'd try to get him excited and get him barking. And all that went really good, and I thought it was time to take him to the woods. First time I can remember really taking him to big woods, me and you went with Bo. And I don't know, I guess Bo was, what, probably 4 or 5 then, I guess. And Smoke was all, yeah, Smoke was all of, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months tops. And I realized real quick that I did not have a squirrel dog yet. He spent all this time right in front of us, and Bo did plenty of treeing. So that was frustrating. And I think, so to me, I guess of all those techniques that you just kind of dropped there, I like to see, get my confidence in the dog knowing that it's either followed my drag or it's chased a yard squirrel or a park squirrel or something before I really take it to a big woods. Because to me, in a smaller controlled area for a young puppy's confidence and even attention span, really, if they can see the squirrels good and it's not a tough hunt and it's not an overwhelming patch of timber, you may see a little more out of them. It might be a more productive training session, I guess. Then once I feel like they're really doing good on those yard squirrels or park squirrels or whatever, that's when I like to transition them to the big woods. Because, you know, I was frustrated when I left with Smoke that day, because I had told you on the phone, oh, yeah, he's treeing squirrels. He's doing good. Well, then you get him out there with another dog, a more experienced dog, for sure, in a bigger patch of woods that I don't think I'd had him to LBO much at that point. And I think it was a little bit overwhelming to him. You know, it was a new place. It was a huge patch of woods. There's this other guy here. There's this other dog here. And to me, that's probably why he stayed with us so much, because it was just so overwhelming. His confidence was tanked, you know.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what comes first, the woods or the tube? Again, depending on the time of year, I guess. Depends on what I feel like doing more than anything, I guess. I'm kind of lazy. But if you never take them to the woods, and then the first time you take them to the woods, a stick hit me between the legs, I got to yelp and run. You know, a weed hit me on the back, I've got to lay down and scoot. I don't know how to get across this ditch. I don't know how to get over this log. So, like you said, yeah, the dog, you know, your pup's overwhelmed because it's never faced any of those obstacles before. Plus, it's a big, scary place out there. It's not in the yard where it can see you from 20 yards away. You know, you can't go behind a tree or something, you know, in the yard. And it always knows where you're at, and it's comfortable where it's always been. So, yeah, it's another learning curve. Even if you've got them treeing squirrels in the yard, you take them to the woods, and they've got to learn something completely different. They got to learn what this big place is and what's everything touching me and how do I get across this stick, you know?
Yeah, and with Lemon, I didn't do, maybe I was lazier, or maybe after going through it with Smoke, I just kind of knew a little better what to do, what worked and what didn't work, I guess is what I should be saying. I didn't do near the drags with her. I played with the tail a lot. I focused on getting her to bark at the tail over her head a lot. I never showed Smoke a cage squirrel, and I did show Lemon a couple, but that was me not being patient. I wanted to know what she was going to do when she saw one right now. She was little. It was almost probably too young. I was afraid it was too young because I didn't want her to have this phobia of squirrels because it was almost bigger than she was at that time. But, you know, Lemon started easier and earlier. And, you know, you and I have talked about that several times, but I think that could have a lot to do with time of the year, too. Smoke, by the time he was really old enough to really be fooled with and hunting and turning on, squirrel season was winding down. Trees were starting to fill back up with leaves, and we kind of missed it. Lemon was born earlier. She was a April litter. So, really, she was getting big enough to be fooled with when the leaves were coming off. So that probably has a lot to do with it too. But I also think that, I don't want to say the drags didn't work and insult everybody's opinion of Where the Red Fern Grows, because I do love that movie. But I don't know that the drag is overly important. And I think to a lot of people with their first dog, it's almost common sense, or it seems to be common sense, that that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to drag this tail across the grass, up a tree, and let the dog find it, and I'm a good girl, good boy of the dog when it does that. I don't think it hurts, my opinion. I did do some of it with Lemon. I did a lot of it with Smoke. But, you know, the one problem I had with Smoke that you helped me fix, and we've talked about it on episodes before, is he wouldn't bark up. I don't know if that was a confidence thing or if it related somehow to pulling a lot of drags and him not being able to look. You know, once we was out in the big woods, he might have been treeing on the scent, but he'd just sit there and look up, and he couldn't see that tail tied in the tree, so he didn't bark. I don't know if that's what it was or not, but I was a lot heavier with artificial training, I'll call it, with Smoke than I was with Lemon. With Lemon, I kind of got her started, got her excited about it, and then we just went to the woods. And there's parts of that that drove me crazy, as you know. But anyway, so what is your opinion on how effective a squirrel tube or a cage squirrel is on a puppy?
I think both of them are very effective. I think that the tube is a little more effective. Of course, I mean, if you're only training one puppy, you're not going to spend the money to build this tube. The reason I think the tube is a little more effective is because it gets to see the pup gets to see the squirrel go across the ground and up a tree. That's what it's going to face in the wild. It's going to see them running across the ground and going up a tree. That's what I like about the tube.
And you've got yours cage up in the woods. Stick. It's not just out in the yard. I mean, it's to me, it's a little more realistic, too, because they're stepping over sticks and leaves and limbs. And, you know, when you're working your tube, you're working your dog in the woods on a tube.
Right. And a cage can do somewhat similar. You know, back to what you're saying about Lemon and how young she was. That's what I caution everybody about is if you've got a cage squirrel and it's beating and banging, don't drag your pup to it. You're going to scare that puppy to death. I don't care how gritty it is on a food bowl. You're going to scare that puppy to death most of the time. Take it off the lead, walk close to the cage, keep walking close to it, calling it, and let it come and figure it out itself. It may shy away from it the first couple of times, and it may just start barking at it immediately.
But if it shies away, it doesn't necessarily mean you don't have a squirrel dog.
Right, yeah. Right. It just don't know what to do.
Yet, yeah.
If you're going to use a cage squirrel, people say, oh, only do it once or twice, and that's it. Well, it depends on what the pup's acting like. If you show it to that pup today and it don't do nothing, show it to it again tomorrow. Don't really do nothing. Well, show it to you again the next day. You know, a couple of days later, show it to them. Get them to barking at that thing. And once you get it to barking, then you may only want to show it to him once a week. If it hadn't took interest in it, it hadn't barked at it, you're not hurting that pup at that point. Going back to what you said a minute ago before I forget, time of year. I have people ask me all the time, what age should I give up on my dog? Well, I wish people would look at it more of season and opportunity than age. If you've got a pup born in November, that pup's going to be a year old before it gets much of an opportunity. It's going to be too young when leaves come on. So it's going to be the next November before you're able to get it out in the woods. So it's already a year old. Most people say, oh, quit on them at a year and a half old. So if you start on November, December, January, so you got half of November, all of December, and half of January that are real good times, real good times. If you kind of miss that good time, it may be the next season before it really takes off. So now you got a two-year-old dog that everybody said you should have culled 6 months ago. I don't think that the seasons were conducive to, you know, that two-year-old dog. Now, if you've got an eight-month-old puppy in November, maybe you can go by that year-and-a-half-old standard that a lot of people's putting on. But I also think improvement is a good judge of it, too. You know, if you've got an eight-month-old pup in November and, you know, it's showing improvement, but it just ain't there yet. It's hunting out a little farther. It's, you know, making a tree every now and then. It's listening a little more, you know. As long as it's showing improvement, I've got time for it. You know, when it quits showing improvement, that's when I start falling away from it a little bit. And that's my impatience sometimes.
Yeah, and that just, that makes a whole lot of sense too. I think that needs to be said. Is that it's, and when you're talking about improvement, I mean, yes, the ultimate goal is to have a dog at the bottom of the tree barking up at a squirrel, but, you know, if to really listen to what you said there, you're not looking just for how well or fast that dog is getting, that puppy is getting under a squirrel. You know, going back to the, I can't get over a log and cross this creek. How well is a dog doing at that? Is the dog cutting through the woods better? Is it crossing that creek now? How fast is it locating? Is it locating faster now than it was last month? That's improvement. Is it looking up more this month than it was last month? That's improvement. The improvement doesn't always need to be measured by how many squirrels are in your bag at the end of the hunt. So I think that was a good piece to be said there. But if you don't have a tube, or access to a tube, and you're not having any luck trapping a squirrel, what would your best advice to getting that young pup started to somebody who doesn't have access to those things, doesn't have access to anything other than, you know, maybe some roadkill in the woods? Do you like hang-ups? Do you like drags? Or would you just take them to the woods and let them discover squirrels?
Nah, I'd use roadkill.
So you,
I don't mind use a drag.
So you do think that there needs to be
some instruction.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So just taking them to the woods wouldn't necessarily accomplish your goal, you don't think? You think a dog still needs to be pointed in the right direction?
I think you would eventually accomplish your goal, because if you've done your research like we talked about before, you know, the chances are you're getting a pup that, and let's face it, the breeding's getting better in some ways. You know, there's more of a percentage of dogs now making it than there was. I think there's enough natural ability out there that, you know, if you take them to the woods only and walk them through the woods enough, I think they're going to start. I think it's going to take you a lot longer, because if you use a tube, a cage, or a drag, a hang-up, a dead squirrel, roadkill, whatever, there's no doubt that there's 100% chance that pup is going to see a squirrel, smell a squirrel that day. 100% chance. Guaranteed that pup's going to see a squirrel. You take it to the woods and just walk it through the woods, there's not 100% chance you're going to see a squirrel that day. When I take a young dog to the woods, 6 months old, something like that, an hour's my max. I like 45 minutes, but an hour's the max. So we've got an hour to get in the woods. We've got an hour to let sticks hit him between the legs and in the back, and crossing creeks, crossing logs, and see a squirrel that runs across the ground right in front of him and goes up a tree. We've got an hour to do that today. That's probably not going to happen. If I've got a tube, a cage, or a hang-up, I guarantee that pup's going to see and smell a squirrel. Whether it's a hang-up, a drag, cage, tube, they're all tools, and all tools can be overused. And most of the time, the pup will tell you if you're overusing it. You know, you never work a pup with anything until it's tired. You stop well before that and put it up. Just like hunting it in the woods. you've got a 4-month-old pup that's actually treeing squirrels in the wild, you don't want to hunt that sucker all day. Eventually, it's going to quit. But back to what I was saying, some instruction is good with a pup before you actually go ask it to start its job. And the best way to do that, like I said, 100% guaranteed it's going to see and smell a squirrel if you've got a tube, a hang-up, or a cage.
So we've researched the dog. We have selected the dog. We've figured out that we're going to start training. Well, immediately, you're going to start some kind of training, building some kind of foundation. To me, even if it's sit or speak or whatever, you know, to start with the dog as soon as possible on getting it to understand that its job in life is to please you, you know, and reward the dog for that. Then the dog is building that foundation already. When I do what he or she wants me to do, then I'm going to get my ear scratched and an extra biscuit in my bowl tonight or something, you know. So now we've showed him a tube, we've showed him a cage squirrel, hang up, something, walked him in the woods, and we really think we got something. And let's say this pup is around, I'm going to pick on Lemon, around 6 months old, 4 to 6 months old. And I go to the woods and I for an hour, 45 minutes, 3 days a week for a month, and my dog isn't doing anything. It didn't look anything like it did at home, Chad. What's your advice?
Keep going.
Heard that. 100%.
Let's face it. It's like I told you and I've told a lot of people. When you start taking a pup to the woods, a young pup, whether it's treat on a cage or treat on a tube or whether it's done anything in the yard or not, when you start taking that pup to the woods, you are wasting your time, period. You're just out there wasting your time. But it's time that you have to waste. When the dog starts treeing, that's when the work begins.
100%.
So take your leisurely time. Take your walk through the woods, your peace and quiet, your whatever that does for you. Take that time because it's just wasted time. And walk your pup through the woods. And just know that at some point, you're going to go from wasting time to actually working. And then from working, then you're going to go to enjoying. So that's, to me, that's the three stages. You got your wasting time, you got your work, and then you have your enjoyment.
I 100% agree. I just finally made it to the enjoyment part, and I feel like it took forever, and it didn't take that long. And some dogs take longer. Smoke took about 12 to 14 months, and Lemon took about 9 before I got to where I was having fun, at least. She's still got I think every dog has something it can learn, but I'm having fun. But, yeah, keep going, I think would be, I feel like that's when people give up. I feel like either one, they show it a cage squirrel a couple times, they don't get the reaction they want, they throw it back in the kennel, and then you see it on Facebook, you know, free to a good home or something. I feel like that's when people give up. They think because, let's say that it did bark on that cage squirrel good, but I took it to the woods and it didn't do anything, didn't tree any squirrels. So I'm done with it. I'm giving up. This dog ain't going to make it. I don't think that's fair to the animal. Now, I guess if you went to the woods for a year and a half and that dog never picked it up, well, then it might need to go live on a farm and chase mice in a barn. I don't know. To me, keep going and don't expect anything. And I know you're probably rolling your eyes at me. I can't see you. But I will tell you from experience, don't expect anything. That was probably my biggest frustration. And I kept a squirrel dog log on Lemon. I never did it on Smoke. And I picked that up from Kevin Bennett. We were talking about something one day, and it just amazed me that he kept a log. And I've met plenty of hunters now that keep logs now that I bring it up. But anyway, I kept a log on Lemon. And I would keep, every day I went hunting, I'd write down whether we treat a squirrel, shot a squirrel, or wasted our time and I wanted to peel her ears off. I kept some sort of note every day I went hunting. And the reason I wanted to do that was because once she was a squirrel dog, and I knew she was going to get there, most of the time I knew she was going to get there, I thought it would be fun to look back and see just how frustrated I was. Plus, it gives me a good, it helps me capture how long it took her. Because it feels like an eternity when you're going through it. It's awful. But when you get to the end, it's like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And I remember I made a note. Let's see, she was born in April. I don't know. I'm not going to do all the math right now, but I should have the log in front of me, and I didn't think about it. But I made a note. I believe it was around the end of November, middle of November, is when I had made a note that she had treed her first squirrel correctly. She had, you know, ambushed some, and not that ambushing a squirrel is incorrect, but she textbook treed a squirrel sometime around the middle end of November. And then I started expecting things. When we went to the woods, I expected her to tree a squirrel and two squirrels tomorrow and three squirrels the next day. And I thought it was just going to be all downhill from then. And it wasn't. We had many weeks of uphill ahead of us. And that was November. By the time I finally made a happy note, I think, you know, good hunt, had fun, treed seven, I don't know, whatever I wrote, it was January. And I was starting to really feel good about this dog. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go back now and see when she started. I don't know what part of January it was, but I remember it was January. And I went back and realized that it was the end of November when I made my first note that she had finally treed, and I felt like an idiot. I thought, it's been 2 months. In 2 months, which felt like 2 years, in 2 months she went from, at that time, I felt like she wasn't ever going to make it and I was going to have to peel her ears off. In 2 months' time, I was relieved, and I felt like she was doing something. And then I continued to expect things and continued to get disappointment. But now that I fell in that rabbit hole, I really just wanted to drive the nail with you of, you know, go expecting to walk in the woods. Don't expect anything. The more you expect, the more frustrated you're going to be, and you're going to be frustrated with the animal. And it's not that animal's fault, because it's just a puppy. It just doesn't know.
And I want to back up to what you said a minute ago. You know, if you walk a pup in the woods for a year and nothing happens, well, let's look at this other scenario. What if you walk in the woods for a year and you never see a squirrel run across the ground? You don't have the squirrels in your area. How do you make a squirrel dog with no squirrels? Well, really, you can't.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's definitely out of my pay grade.
That's like telling a receiver to learn how to be a receiver and you don't have a quarterback. Well, how's he going to learn how to catch if he ain't got nobody throwing to him? You know, and I've talked to Vance about this. You know, he's up in New York. Squirrels are hard to come by where he's at. And he has a hard time getting dogs started up there. He comes down here, and you know, he gets dogs started. But if you don't have the game, you can't expect a dog to start. And I guess that leads me into, I've had a lot of questions. Well, do you start them with an older dog? No. Well, why not? We did beagles that way. You know, we did hounds that way. Yeah, it might work for them. But when you've got an older dog out there that knows what he's doing, he's running out there, whether you like him at 100 yards or 300 yards, they're running out there, they're running the squirrels up, they're treeing squirrels, and that pup's back there not as fast, don't know how to get through the woods as fast, don't know exactly what it's doing. It never gets a chance to see a squirrel because that older dog's done put them all up. So, to me, it's a lot easier to train a pup by itself. I can take my time, walk through the woods real slow, sneak around, you know, all that stuff to try to put that pup in the right place at the right time. And sometimes it only takes the right place, the right time, one time. I have seen dogs go from nothing to look like a finished dog in one squirrel. They tree a squirrel today, look pretty good. Tomorrow you shoot five to it. I've seen it happen that quick. Does it always happen that quick? No, but I've seen it. But they have to have the right situation at the right age. Everything's got to be exactly right. Going back to something you said a few minutes ago, you know, I had a guy come and bought a pup. Well, I'd got him back. Guy didn't do anything with him. He was 6 months old. I'd started walking him through the woods a little bit. And he was going out hunting. Really wasn't treeing, but he was going out hunting. And a guy come over and wanted a squirrel dog. And I said, well, I'll take you to the woods with him. He's not started, but I'll take you to the woods and show you what he's doing. So he came down and took him out. He went out hunting and showed a little interest in one tree. And I patted on a tree, got him barked a couple times. I shot up, make sure, you know, show him he wasn't gunshot. He said, I'm going to buy him. He said, I've always wanted a squirrel dog. And I said, well, I'm not selling you a squirrel dog. I said, I'm selling you advice, but whether it becomes a squirrel dog or not, it's up to you. You know, it goes back to, you know, getting them out and them not doing anything and you just putting them back in the kennel and giving up on them. Well, you've got to do your part too. So you're not buying a squirrel dog when you're buying a puppy. You're buying a feist puppy.
Yep.
And that guy ended up doing his job and made a real nice dog out of it. You know, I had a guy call me. I had a pup, wouldn't bark. What do I do? It wouldn't bark. Won't bark. I said, he was, that pup was going through 400 yards and staying treed. Just wasn't barking. I said, don't give up on him. He's going to bark. If he'll stay that long, he's going to bark, you know. And, he called me, a little while later. He said, well, I've messed up. And I said, what'd you do? He said, I sold that pup. And I said, you did? And he said, yeah, 3 days after that other guy got him, he started barking. So, sometimes when you think you want to give up, that's the time to keep pushing forward because that's the time things are getting ready to happen.
Yes. And on that note, I'm glad you said that. So that kind of leads into another area of topics I wanted to hit on is some of the common difficulties and questions that you get. So just to stay with getting one to bark, because I think that's somewhat common. And I think it's also that falls into don't expect anything. You expect this dog to toenail the tree and bark up and look like a magazine cover just because he's supposed to, not necessarily because he's ready to. But getting one to bark, so that is something that I struggled with the first dog. And I could get him, if I really messed with him with that tail, you know, shaking it in the tree and getting him excited, I could work a bark out of him and I'd throw it to him and pet him real good and celebrate it just as quick as you can. Once you get that behavior that you want, make sure to celebrate it right then. But then he'd forget. I'd get out the next day with him and it was like yesterday never happened. And it was, I don't know what it was about him barking. But my house dog, I think I could teach her to stand on her head and recite her ABCs if I wanted to. I mean, she's just always been trainable, smart dog, wants to please me. So I knew, and I've never taught her to speak on command because I can't stand a house dog that barks. I don't like when she barks, but I knew I could teach her to pretty quick. And I got her out in the patio, her and that puppy, and they both knew how to sit. So I'd hold a treat up and tell them to sit, and they'd get their treats for sitting. And I taught her to bark, my house dog, in about 5 minutes. And then I would look at Smoke and say, speak. And if he didn't bark, when the house dog barked, she got the treat. And it didn't take him long to figure out that she's getting the treat because she's barking and I can do that too. So then I transitioned that to the tree. Once I had him to where he could speak on command, and I'm sure there's 100 other tricks, but this is just the idea that I had, and it helped. I won't say that it was an immediate fix, but it helped. There was plenty of times that I'd lean up on a tree and I'd have a squirrel right in my scope and I'd be sitting there waiting on him to bark because I don't believe in shooting the squirrel out to the dog if the dog didn't do it right. I don't ever want to reward a half-hearted effort, I guess. And there's plenty of times that I know he run it up and I know he's sitting under the tree and I'm looking at the squirrel in my scope and if he didn't bark, we moved on. I didn't celebrate him doing half of it right. But I'd be sitting there looking through my scope saying, talk to him, Smoke. Where they at? Speak, talk to him. And if I could get one little yep out of him in the beginning, I shot and dropped that squirrel. And from there, you can build on that yep into the tree behavior that you want. But I think a lot of times people expect 100 barks a minute from the time that they figure it out. And that, to me, is a really high expectation to put on a dog.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of that, and we're talking about training puppies and everything, and I tell a lot of people, I'm not a trainer. If you can get your dog to bark on command, you probably train more than I do. They kind of got to do it natural. Now, if they do something natural, I know how to reinforce some of that, but as far as training it into them, and I think, going back to what I said, I think getting them to bark, the earlier you can get them to bark, the better off you are on the barking part.
Yeah, and I thought of that when you said that earlier about Rascal and that toy. With Smoke, I didn't spend the time. I just kind of always, I guess I was in the boat of, it's a dog, it'll bark. You just kind of think dogs will bark. And they will bark. He knew how to bark. He just didn't always know how to do it when he was supposed to. And so what you did with Rascal and that toy, I think, is, and I did that a little bit more with Lemon than I did with Smoke, you know, as far as barking at the toy. I didn't think about it then, but now it makes sense that you're just building that, like I said, foundation around barking and good boy. And now, again, you've got him doing it in your house, and I'd have to take him outside and do it. I don't like a dog barking in the house. It makes me crazy. But staying with the barking, too. So another trick that is your trick, I'm not going to take credit for it, but I think it needs to be said because I believe in it. I use it. When a dog is treed and barking and people are walking in the woods and the dog is, you know, he shuts up when I get there. Some of that could be a lot of the dog's personality, but the one thing that you always drove with or would tell me and that I would drive into my dogs then is if they're not barking or doing what you know they should be doing, what they know how to do. I'm talking about a point once you've got a started dog, we'll say, stop walking. If the dog is sitting at the tree barking and he's shutting up when you get there, just stand there and look at him. And when they bark, take a step. Only approach the dog when the dog is barking and showing you the behavior that you expect out of the dog.
Yeah, and different people like different things. You know, to me, a dog needs to bark till I get there. Now, if they see me off 50 yards in the woods and I'm not there, yep, you need to keep barking till I get there. And that's where I'll stop. And they'll be looking at me and they bark once and I'll take a step. They bark again, I'll take another step. And they bark four or five times, I'll just start walking. Then when they stop, I'll stop again. But myself, when I get there, that dog doesn't have to say another word. I just soon it not be blowing my eardrums out while I'm looking for a squirrel. I don't. It done its job. It got me there.
Right.
Some people want it to bark 100 times a minute while they're looking for a squirrel. And if that's what you like, you can reinforce that behavior.
Yeah, I think I saw that on Facebook one time. It was in a squirrel dog group. My favorite thing to hear is a dog barking, and my least favorite thing to hear is a dog barking.
Yeah, so, you know, any of that, there's little tricks. And most of the time, a dog will tell you what you need to do. I had a guy call me one time, six-month-old pup, treeing good. Seven-month-old, still treeing good. Eight-month-old, still treeing good, but now it's leaving the tree. You know, it'll bark five or six times and take off. First thing I said was, well, how fast are you getting there? Oh, I'm getting there fast. I said, well, time yourself and let me know. You know, he called me back. I'm getting to every tree in less than 30 seconds. I said, do what? And he said, yep. I said, stop. He said, what do you mean she'll leave? I said, well, if she leaves, she don't get the squirrel. If she comes back to you, walk off like she's never done anything, but just take your time getting to her. And I said, you know, walk slower, and then stop for a minute, then stop for 2 minutes, and then go to her. You know, 2 weeks later, he called me back. He said, I can't get her to leave the tree now. So, you know, dogs will pick up. If you get to the tree real fast, just send them on immediately. You know, they'll pick up on that. I'm bad about that when the leaves come on. Leaves come on, I'm out hunting a dog. I barely look in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just ready to go. Well, the dog needs to learn patience.
Yeah, especially this time of year when you can't shoot. Even if you could see them, you can't shoot them, you know.
On a tree dog, I want it to stay at the tree until I say it's time to go. And the only way they learn that is by patience. And the only way they learn patience is if they have to stay there for a while. You know, when I first start a pup and they're doing it right, I'll run to them. I don't care if they're 50 yards. I'm at a sprint getting to them. I'm trying to knock that squirrel out. And I'll do that five or six times. And then, you know, I'll walk a little fast. Then I'll walk a little slower. Then I'll walk a little slower still. You know, and if they're treeing real close, I'll just stop and listen to them for a minute or so. And again, that dog will teach you. It'll let you know when it's ready for you to walk slower. You know, you can tell when that dog's interested in wanting to stay. And you just let him stay a little longer and a little longer. And if you're taking too long to get there and he's wanting to leave, now you might want to speed it up just a little bit and reinforce stay on the tree. And then back down a little bit. But they'll let you know what they need.
Yeah, my first thought when you said that about the guy saying he's leaving the tree, my first thought was what you said a minute ago, keep going. I mean, that's a tough one. You know, I think when they're young and they tree and they do everything right, and you start running to get there, and then all of a sudden you realize they've, you know, they're 200 yards the other way. They've moved on, and you're sitting there sucking wind, ready to choke the thing because it didn't hold, and here you've hustled over there. That's part of it. You know, that is a tough one. That's good advice, I think, but that's probably going to happen to you. That's something you can expect when expecting. Your dog will go through a phase when it does it right, and then it sees another squirrel, you know, 50 yards in another tree and takes off running before you've ever got to look up the tree that it left. With me, it's frustrating. I just move on, bite my tongue, and move on. Definitely good advice there, though, because eventually you will get there, and eventually you will shoot the game out to the dog, and then the dog will, I think the dog will pick up, oh, well, if I just let him get here with that boomstick, then I'll get to eat him.
People, I think, want to do everything for them because they're not wanting them to mess up. Give that dog a chance to mess up. That's the only way it's going to learn. When it messes up, you correct it, they've learned. Give them that opportunity to leave that tree. Because when they leave that tree, then you have something to correct. Then they can learn.
Right. And correcting it can be tough because a lot of times it's happening when you're not there. I never burn a dog up with a shock collar in the woods for leaving, especially if you're looking at it just on the Garmin. Because if Lemon was there treed 60 yards from me and sounded good and I hadn't got there yet, and then I look down again and she's 260 yards from me, I don't know what it was that made her leave. Could have been a squirrel. It could have been the same squirrel come down the tree and run off. I don't know what happened. So if it happens when I'm not looking at it, I'm not going to burn that dog up for something that I couldn't witness. I think the shock collars are and the tracking collars are awesome. They've been there as long as I've been in the sport, and I don't envy not hunting at the time when those didn't exist. I don't ever want to beep beep. And I don't ever want to just turn my ear to the wind and hope that I hear them. But I think that a lot of damage can be done with that, with burning a dog up too. My experience, squirrel dogs or any dog I've had in my life, my experience, if the dog respects you, which can be learned from the time it's a puppy, but if the dog respects you, you can get a lot done just with scolding a dog. You don't even have to raise your hand to it. You don't have to burn it up. If you've already got the dog's respect, in my opinion, Lemon, she won't take a shock collar very good. Now, Smoke, on the other hand, that dog was hard-headed. I mean, when he got shocked, sometimes I had to dial it up to get his attention. Lemon, you can turn it all the way down, and if you bump her once, she's got it. She don't like it. She doesn't take it good. I can get more done just by scolding her with my voice because I have her respect, and she wants to please me. She doesn't want to do wrong. No animal wants to do wrong. So that's probably something maybe we should have said earlier, but or maybe I should have said. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think the shock collar is a very usable tool, but if it's overused, you're going to ruin one, a dog.
Well, I've said
it
for years, and I said it back when I had beagles, and we just had shock collars, not tracking. The technical name is a training collar. It is a training tool. It's not a torture device. And I've seen people that use them as a torture device. But just like leaving the tree, you know, if your dog, if you're 60 yards away from your dog and you've seen it's left the tree, forget that tree.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go find the tree it was on if you couldn't see which one it was on. You're not going to find the right tree. So why call it back? Even if you knew what the right tree is, they've completely lost interest in it. It's not going to do them any good to call them back.
And they're not near as mad about it as you are.
Right. That's like a dog tearing a shoe up while you're at the grocery store. You come home, you find your shoe tore up, and you start whipping the dog. Well, it has no clue what it did.
Right. Yeah.
If I can get within 20 yards of my dog, my pup, sometimes I'll stand there and just think to myself, I hope you leave. I want you to leave. Come, please leave the tree.
So I can fix it.
Because I want to teach you that that's not the right thing to do. Because then I know what tree it's on. I know where it's supposed to be. They know what they're supposed to do. I can catch them in time that they haven't forgotten about what they were doing, you know, and that's how I train sometimes too, is, like I said, you got to give them the opportunity to mess up.
I just thought of another one too. A guy asked me not that long ago, a few months ago. Well, he was asking, how would you stop a dog from darting out the door when you open it? Which my answer was to have a good recall. I don't really care about the house training part being any part to do with this episode, but just to talk on recall, because I think recall is important on a hunting dog, especially because they might be out 600-800 yards from you and that collar die or lose connection or whatever. You know, to me, putting a handle on a dog is almost important as to having a squirrel dog to me. I want a dog, you know, mine may be hyper and bounce all over the place, but she's got a handle. And to me personally, and everybody could be different, but to me personally, that is very important. That's another thing that is hard at times when you're getting frustrated to not burn a dog up because it's not listening. With Smoke, he just kind of figured it out, really. I never worked on it much, and he didn't get a handle very early on. And his handle's not as good, wasn't as good as Lemon's is. And he just kind of eventually figured out when I said, come on, we're coming on, or he's getting lift. Lemon, I had a guy tell me to put him on a long lead, put a dog out on a long lead, and just let them run, let them be free and eat turds and chew on toys or whatever they're doing. And every time you want that dog to come, when you're trying to teach that recall, hear or whatever your word is, give them the command and pop that lead. And, you know, don't drag them across the ground, but just pop it enough to spin their head towards you and get your attention. When that dog comes to you, and it will, and if it doesn't, leave it alone, try again. But eventually that dog will figure out that you're reeling it in, and once you reel it in, just give it all the love and praise like it just, you know, cured cancer, whatever. And that worked really well with Lemon after that guy had told me that. And I've also heard people say take him to a ballpark or a dog park or somewhere that's fenced in and you can contain the dog and let them run with a long lead. And when they come running by you, to step on the lead and say, here, or come, or fluffy, whatever your word is. And when you step on that lead and it jars the dog learns then that, oh, he's talking to me, I gotta listen. Again, don't break your dog's neck, do it all safely. But good advice. And I didn't do the dog park one, but I did use a 25-foot lead with Lemon, and I could tell the big difference pretty quick. You know, and I did it, I put the recall on her all completely without a collar. Well, there was one time, okay, I'm lying. There was one time I shocked her when she was too young, and I was afraid that I had ruined her because she was about 6 months old, you know, just really getting big enough to be shocked anyway. And she didn't take it well. I learned right off the bat she didn't take it well, and I was afraid I'd never get a collar on her again or get her to act right wearing one, but she got past it. But anyway, try. Just don't burn the dog up with a shock collar. Like you said, it is a training device. It's not a torture device.
See, I'm completely the opposite of you on that.
On recall.
I do not have the temperament to use a long lead on a dog, because about the fifth time I call its name and it ain't coming, I get too heavy-handed.
It gets a correction.
It's easier on my dogs for the shock collar. I turn them loose in my backyard, fenced in, with shock collar on, and they figure out it's going to get pretty daggone hot out there until I get to him. And he's petting on me instead of, so I do a little bit different than you on that. And that's just the, you know, difference that I figured out that, hey, I can't do that.
Yeah, and I didn't do it necessarily that way with Smoke, but in the woods, you know, Smoke, come on. Well, he ain't coming. He got bumped. So I guess in a roundabout way, I put a handle on him with that same technique. Similar.
And here's a point that I want to point out too, what you just said. Okay, you ruined your dog by shocking it. Well, your dog was ruined already. Your dog wasn't coming to you. It wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. So it's ruined already. So you're either going to fix the problem or you're not going to fix the problem. If that dog can't take, you know, that pulling on the cord or that little shock or whatever it may be, you know, if you can't get your hands on your dog, it's ruined already. So you need to try to fix that problem. I don't think you're going to ruin it in the process. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
And some of this stuff is trial and error, you know.
Yes, a lot, yeah, almost all.
I can't get it to stay on the tree. I don't want to shock it while it's on the tree because it'll run it off the tree. Your dog's already leaving the tree. Why not try to shock it and make it stay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that didn't work. Well, let's try something else. You know, sometimes this goes by trial and error, too.
Yeah, and yeah, try again, something else is the key words there.
Yeah. There again, your dog will let you know what's working and what's not working.
Yeah.
By doing that, so
Lemon can't take the collar and smoke good.
Try something new.
Well, we could go on with this forever. I'm just trying to think of like everything that people have ever asked me or whatever. But I know another big one issue to resolve would be gun shyness. That one comes up a lot. I don't know. Fortunately, I have never had to fix that. Have you?
That goes in the same part of that book as Proven Cross to me. Are there some dogs that are a little more prone to being shy? Sure there is. But a dog that's never heard a gunshot cannot be gun shy. Can it be shy in general? Yes. And then be tender to the gun? Yes. But a dog that's never heard a gunshot does not know to be scared of that gunshot. Is the way I look at it. Some people beat pans when they start feeding puppies. Later on, they'll shoot a .22 while they're feeding puppies. And, hey, that's a different way of doing it. That's a good way of doing it. I don't. My dogs get shot around when they tree their first squirrel.
Yep. That's what it was.
I don't shoot here at the house. I don't beat pans. I don't do none of that. When they tree their first squirrel, that's when they hear their first gunshot. And I'm trying my best to get that squirrel out with one shot. Because once they figure out that big boom brings me a squirrel, you can shoot a cannon around them and you're not going to faze them. They're going to be looking up waiting for something to fall out of the sky.
Yeah, and they'll run to a gunshot. They'll be out away from you, can't hear you. But if you shoot a gun, they'll be back at your feet in a minute. With Lemon, she was a little tender. I remember the first one she treed. I shot it and it got hung up on a limb. And I'm not exaggerating. I think like 55 shells later, I forget how many times I reloaded. That squirrel had so many holes in it, but it was her first one, so I was going to make sure she got to eat it. And I about ran out of bullets, and I was trying to figure out how to climb a tree. She was a little tender to the gun, and to your point, it probably wasn't good that I just kept sitting there hammering away at that squirrel trying to knock it out, because she had no idea what I was doing. She probably thought I was crazy. I know you do, and I do. I've never beat a pan or shot while the dog was eating either. I've heard all those tricks and they make sense. I'm the same way. I guess I took that note from you. Just shoot around them when they tree their first one. But I do try to do it. I try to introduce a dog with a .22. Lemon had the shotgun around her a little more at a younger age than Smoke did. But I try to start with a .22. It's just less percussion. It's not as scary. It's not as big of a boom. It's what I prefer to hunt with anyway, but I don't know that I would jump straight to a shotgun with a young dog, but I guess if it's all you got, it's what you got. Dogs will get used to it eventually.
Well, I was hunting with a guy and his dog kindly was backing up a little bit, you know, still treeing, but backing up a little bit. And we was out hunting one day and he's shooting a 12 gauge. And well, I said, I think I know what your dog's problem is. He said, what? And I said, at 12 gauge. He said, what do you mean? And I said, well, he's kindly tiring just a little bit when you shoot it. Of course, he's shooting three times in a row and never knocking nothing out. And we got to hunt together a little bit more and got more squirrels out. And you know, he finally figured out that loud boom brings me the squirrel. But I'm like you. I usually try to start my pups out with .22 with subsonics in it. And then if you can just put those subsonics, if you can get five or six squirrels knocked out to it, you can go to a 20 gauge or a 12 gauge.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to work their way up. It's just they got to figure out that boom brings a squirrel. I've never been in that situation, so I really can't say how to correct that. I've heard people, you know, get a gun a little farther away, get your buddy to shoot, and then give it a squirrel, and get a little closer, shoot, and then give it a squirrel, a little closer, you know, over days. And when you get done, he should be used to it and can shoot right next to him and give him a squirrel and then he's ready to go. But I've never had to do that, so I don't know. I can't say that that works or it doesn't. I've heard that it does, but I really don't know.
Yeah, guns never bothered Smoke, and Lemon was tender, didn't like it, but I made sure she was tied, you know, and she would never try to break her neck and run away. When I shot, she didn't head to town, you know. She would just back up, kind of like you were describing. She didn't know what to think about it. So when I got to trees, I started tying her so that she wouldn't have the ability to run off, and she would stay there and witness that this gun is not going to eat her. And then she eventually started getting squirrels knocked out to her, and that's when her tenderness is totally gone now. She could, like you said, carry if you shot a cannon off. Just don't start a gas engine. She doesn't like lawnmowers and four-wheelers and leaf blowers and weed eaters, so don't cut the tree down because a chainsaw is going to terrify her. But a gun, that won't bother her a bit anymore. Well, can you think of any other common ones?
I'm glad we're recording this, and I can be far away from people that want to shoot me, but tying a dog.
Well, we're going to disagree on this anyway, probably.
Yeah, I disagree with about everybody I talk to on this. I never tie dogs. The only time I tie a dog is competition. I can call my dog off a tree. It doesn't matter if he's 50 yards or 500 yards. He's treed solid, I can call him off. Some people don't like that. Some people don't understand that. The way I train my dogs is they leave when I tell them to leave. I've had Junior and Doll both treed on the same tree before, and I wanted to see just how good they would do. And I called Doll off the tree by herself. Junior stayed right there and treed. I sent her on and then called Junior off. And then they treed again. I called Junior off first, sent him on. Then I called Doll off. I guess what really got me thinking about it is I competition hunted with a guy, off and on for about 3 years. We would see each other at hunts and stuff. And I got to draw out with his dog, you know, a few times. And pretty nice dog, except she didn't like staying treed very good. Treed plenty of squirrels. But every time I seen him on Facebook, he had this dog tied to a tree every time. And I asked him, I said, why do you tie your dog when you're pleasure hunting? He said, oh, that just teaches them to stay tight on a tree. And I thought to myself, well, that dog's not a bit tighter now than it was 3 years ago. So to me, that didn't work. I've got yard dogs. I've got a fenced in backyard. Those dogs have been taught since the day that I got them. This is your yard. This is your boundary. This is where you stay. You leave a gate open and them suckers are gone, and they might be gone for a day and a half, but they're gone. So that boundary didn't teach them dogs anything either. So I think a dog either wants to stay. You know, to me, I told a guy one time, I said, you know, that's like a minimum security prison and a maximum security prison. When you've got the lead on them, they got no choice but to stay there. You know, just like a maximum security prison. I want a dog to be like a minimum security prison. I want it there just because it knows that's the right thing to do and it wants to be there. And that's my opinion on it. I don't know that I've ever talked to anybody else
that agreed with you.
It has the same opinion of mine. Everybody else says tie the dog. Like I said before, there's no right way. There's no wrong way. There's just different ways. And that's my way.
Yeah. So, I tie Lemon a lot more than I do Smoke. And honestly, she learned to hold a tree faster than he did. And I'm not sitting here saying that's because of tying. I mean, there's several things that she did different than he did, and he did different than she did. But I don't tie her. Pleasure hunting, obviously, I don't tire every time, but I do most times. And I don't think I do it so much as a training. Well, I guess it is kind of training. I agree with you. I don't think it necessarily makes a dog hold tighter. I think there's other ways to teach a dog to hold, like we talked about already. You know, teaching a dog patience, to me, is how you teach a dog to hold. Because if your dog's leaving and running off and you can't get your hands on it to tie it to the tree, how is that fixing anything? You know, so I do agree with you a little bit there that I don't know that it necessarily makes them hold tighter, because they already held long enough for me to get there and leash them. So it's more of a patience than it is a tie-out thing, in my opinion. I tie Lemon at Trees because, mainly because of competition. I just want her to be used to it. When I go in to a tree and she's treed, when she sees me take my leash off of me to hook it around a tree and tie it to her, she gets more excited. And I think that's probably because I do it when we're pleasure hunting. And she knows when I tie her to that tree, I'm getting ready to shoot the squirrel out. So sometimes she'll start barking more and better once I've got her tied. And a lot of people will say, you know, oh, they're doing that because you're tying them back and it's making them want it more. It don't matter whether I tie her back or I tie her to the tree she treed on. When that leash comes off, she's just excited about it. But I don't do it. I don't do it to make them, to make her hold tighter. I actually probably do agree with most of what you said. I feel like this is one of those that we can just go on forever. We could be on for hours talking about dog tricks and bad habits.
Yeah, I think that covered the main ones.
Getting a dog to go, maybe that's one. And I've been rolling this one around in my head because I don't know that it's just one of those that you say it and you're putting it on the internet and who knows. But I guess I'm going to trust our listeners at this point. Lemon hunts. Lemon cuts loose. I mean, for a one-year-old dog, she cuts loose. She's flying through the woods. She's on a mission. She's done that naturally. I didn't teach her. Smoke, I did teach. And you and I have talked about this, and we disagree on this a little bit. One, we disagree slightly on what we want our dogs to do in the woods or what we want it to look like. But I know that I've talked to you about this before, and you don't really necessarily believe that you can teach a dog to cut and go hunting. And I don't care if a dog, I like this when I cut Lemon loose and she flies in there, I like to see it. But I don't care if she does that, but I do want her to leave. I don't care if she leaves like her tail's on fire or if she leaves just to go hunt. You know, at what speed she leaves, I don't care. But when I take the leash off, I want them away from me. So with Smoke, I did have somebody ask me once after a cast. They said, you know, for your dog's age, he does great going out and getting hunting. And, you know, how did you do that? Or did you do that? And I had to look at him and I said, well, you want me to tell you the truth? You know, no judgment here. This is a no judgment zone. And they said, yeah, it's fine. You know, whatever. And so what I did with him was once he was a squirrel dog and he knew what I expected of him when I took that leash off, it's kind of like, I don't know, being a teenager, getting your driver's license, I guess. You get new responsibilities now. You're a squirrel dog, so now I'm going to start fine-tuning you, is kind of the way I saw it. And I just break a green switch. I never, you know, beat the fur off of him, but if I cut him loose and he went out 25 yards and then wanted to come back to me, if he got within distance of that switch, he got whipped across the hams. And I would tell him to go or whatever, where they at, whatever I said, whenever I was training him to go find squirrels. If I whipped him, I'd say go. And he eventually figured out if he stayed away from me and got treed, he'd get a squirrel or he'd get a good boy. But if he come back to me, he got a switch. And it didn't take him long. It wasn't like I'm running around the woods beating my dog to death, but it didn't take him long to understand what I wanted him to do and what I expected. I would say less than a week, and he figured out to get away from me. You know, I know I've talked to you, and you don't necessarily care as much if a dog gets away from you as long as a dog is finding a squirrel.
Yeah, I think some people, and I've heard people, you know, they'll get out of their truck and they hear a squirrel moving, they'll cut the dog loose, the dog can hear or see it, and it takes off and trees that squirrel, then they load it up and take it to another spot, and that's how they get their dogs to take off and just go. I think there's a fine line to that. I think that if you're not careful, you teach a dog to run past squirrels, and I don't want that to happen.
Right.
I want a dog to go hunting. I don't want it just stand over there and underneath my feet and stuff, so they don't have to leave like their tails on fire, because most time if they do, they're going to run by a squirrel, and that irritates me.
It's fun to see, and it looks good on a dog when you're in the woods. You know, to me, when I was getting into this and watching and doing my research phase, that's what I thought a dog was supposed to do. So when I would cut Smoke loose and he wouldn't do it, it frustrated me. Why aren't you doing it like them other dogs? Well, some of it, I think, comes with age, but it also it's not necessary. A dog doesn't have to cut loose like that to be a good dog. A dog just has to go hunting and know what he's doing. But I don't
know what I was going to say. Consistency on your part, on some of that. Whether you pat the dog on the side, you know, you unsnap it and pat the dog on the side to get it to go, do that every time. If you say go, do that every time. Find me a squirrel, do that every time. Snap the lead snap, you know, do that every time. Be consistent, you know, give the, you know, they need to find a cue that's what you want them to do. You know, don't go out there today and go get them. And tomorrow, find me a squirrel. The next day, go. Next day, pat them on the side.
Yeah, they need to hear the same cue.
Find one key word and or one key sound or movement or whatever the case may be. So I think that would make a big difference too.
Yeah, and I've heard people doing it with caged animals. You know, they'll back them out in the field and set the cage at the edge of the woods, and they'll cut the dog loose and let it fly to that cage. And then they'll back the dog up further and move the cage deeper in the woods, and that's how they train on that cutting loose. There's a couple parts about that method that I disagree with that I think could build bad habits, but I can understand where they're coming from. You know, if that's all you're trying to do is just get them to race. But I don't care if a dog does it or not. I like to see it. I like when Lemon does it. It makes me smile a little bit. But if she didn't do it, I'd still feed her. You know, she's still a good squirrel dog. I think we've hit most of the most common Facebook questions.
Yeah, and most of the common questions that I get asked on the phone and everything else, just
we can sit here and we could talk about tips and tricks for 5 hours, and there's going to be someone else with some idea that we didn't cover, you know, that's a good idea. So we've hit the research, and we have hit reach in there and grab one. Don't concern yourself too much when they're 6 weeks old, which one you're picking. Just pick the one you like. Training tubes, squirrel cages, drags, exposure to the woods. We've hit on all that, and then we've given a few scenario tips and tricks, and I think that's probably about all we can do with a puppy episode. But again, we could do a whole nother episode and pick up where we left off. But I think we got a puppy episode.
Just remember, you know, training a dog is much like life. The first part of your life, you're wasting your time, then you're working all the time, and then you get to enjoy it for a while. So, you know, just look at it like that.
And let them be a puppy. That's one thing that I think the days that you don't do anything with that dog are just as important as the days that you did. You've got to let it be a puppy. And that's hard for me. I'm a one-dog guy, and I had a dog die earlier than he was supposed to, so I was right back in puppies, and I was riding Lemon hard. She may be tougher than I think she is because she took it pretty well and come out the other side. But, you know, there was lots of times when I was not letting her be a puppy, and I was losing my patience. And so, you know, right there along with our advice of don't expect anything when you go to the woods, let them be a puppy would probably be just as important to me.
And let me add one little thing in there. I know we got to go, but one little thing. One thing that I believe has helped me a couple times is if a dog does really good today, you're just super proud of it. It's done everything right. Put that dog up for a day or two. Let it think about it. I don't think they think like me and you do, but I think they do think about things. And if they do really good, put them up. Let them think about that for a day or two, then take them back out.
Yeah, end on a good note, yeah.
Yeah, end on a good note, but like I said, keep them up for a day or two. Let them really think about it and see if that makes a difference. I think it has on a couple of my dogs that I've done that with.